Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 121, recorded on March 15th, 2011. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iPhone, iPod Touch, and of course iPad. I'm Michael Johnston, and I'm here with Bill Palmer from BeatWeek magazine. Hey, Bill.
Can I just tell you something? I'm sitting here, I'm not wearing any pants, and it's completely unrelated. Kesha's on the cover of my magazine right now, so I don't know why I need to share this information. Something is very wrong with me.
Well, the recommended way for doing the podcast is no pants.
I don't know why I brought up Kesha. The poor girl has nothing to do with that.
Is that how you say it? I thought it was Keisha.
Oh my God, really?
I mean, you probably spoke to her.
It's actually $ha, as she likes it sometimes. No, she actually says that sometimes.
$ha?
Well, you know, it's $
Yeah. I like that. That's how I'm going to say it.
That's kind of catchy.
Yeah.
Hi, Mom, Dad, I'd like you to meet my new girlfriend. $ha?
$ha. All right. Also, here, of course, is Adam Christensen.
I'm going to be in so much trouble with her label if anyone ever listens to this.
Yeah, nobody listens to this. Adam Christensen's here. From the MacCast.
Yes, I am. Yeah. I was worried that Bill was going to announce that he'd changed the name of the magazine again.
Yeah.
So I'm glad
to dollar sign, just, huh?
Yeah, we put a dollar,
yeah, dollar sign
the
on the cover.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff Gamet's also here, managing editor of the Mac Observer.
Hey, and it's great to be here. I want to put a dollar sign in my name somewhere.
Do you have room for one? I guess you could replace the F's with dollar signs.
It's Jess Gamet.
You could, yeah, Jess.
Yeah. I could.
Okay.
I could do your symbols, and I could be Jack.
You could do the simoleon. Is that the simoleon symbol? I know it as simoleon symbol, but it's probably something real.
I think you should add an extra T and go with a pi symbol on the end of Gamet.
This is really just going the wrong direction way too early.
Okay.
Right, that's sufficiently
that
nerdy.
Awesome.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Or I guess I could replace the M with a pi symbol, because that's kind of M looking.
Oh, there you go.
All right, so we got to talk about the iPad, right? iPad 2 came out Friday.
Oh, Michael, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were here.
Yeah, hi.
He's not letting us commandeer the show. He's like, business today.
Now this is what I'm here to do. I'm here to let the line slack a little bit, but then I got to reel it back in. So iPad 2 was released on Friday, of course, at 5 p.m. at the retail stores, and went on sale at 1 a.m. Pacific time online at the Apple stores.
Yes,
it was on sale before that because I checked it at 12:30, a little after 12:30 a.m., and they were taking orders at least in the iPhone app, because it was already reporting to me by that point that it was a 2 to 3 wait for shipping.
2 to 3 week?
Week, yeah, sorry.
Wow.
What did I say? 2 to 3 wait?
Yeah.
Yes, 2 to 3 weeks for shipping, which is why I ended up going to an Apple store. I wasn't going to go to my local Apple store until about noon or 1 o'clock, and when I saw that, I'm like, oh, crud, I got to go 5 a.m. So... But I got there at 5 a.m. and there was only one guy in line.
Oh, you got there at 5 a.m. Wow.
5 a.m. But I didn't get in line until about 8 or 9 a.m.
Okay.
A little before 9.
Yeah, so I don't know what gave me the impression that I had that the iPad 2 wasn't going to be in insane demand. I just assumed that I could probably waltz up to an Apple store at like 8 p.m. and get one.
I thought the same kind of thing, but I was wrong.
So did I.
Yeah.
Why do you think Apple manufactured it to artificially create the long lines? Not that there weren't lines, but I mean, after all those people wrote that Verizon iPhone 4 greeted by short lines headline, I think you just kind of knew that Apple wasn't going to put up with that. And so, you know, they did no pre-orders ahead of time. So you'd have to stand in line if you wanted one on day one. And I'm not saying they did this on purpose, but once I got in the store, I realized why it took 5 hours to get through the line, even after, you know, it opened. I mean, we got in line at 3 and it opened at 5, and we got in about 8 or 9.
Wow. And
there were only 150 people or so ahead of us in line. We were at a small store. And we got inside, we realized, wow, the store was open to other customers. And I swear to God, it was like they were trying to make the iPad transactions go as slow as possible. Like, which one do you want? And then they'd go in the back, and then they'd come back, and, you know, and then and they like offered to set us up online and do a demo. And I'm like, yeah, because I want to stand here and keep the other 1,000 people outside freezing to death, you know, waiting even longer. And it occurred to me, like, wow, did they just totally jury-rig this to make sure the lines were massive and ridiculous? And never mind the fact that they had, like, three of each model on hand. I've never seen such weak inventory for any Apple launch. But the whole thing felt very demented, and I actually went home very angry, even though I had one, which was kind of
surprising. Yeah. I mean, I didn't get one, and I was kind of angry. But I was in Chicago for just, you know, hanging out and stuff, and I decided I would get my iPad at a Chicago Apple store as opposed to maybe going to like Deer Park or something in Illinois. And on my way toward the Michigan Avenue Apple store, I actually saw at about 1:30 p.m. the line already going down the block. And of course, it's not too surprising considering it's the flagship Apple store for the Midwest. But I mean, I really did not expect that. And so I would say 5:30, I got in line at the Lincoln Park Apple Store, one of the newest Apple stores, which is very cool, by the way. And there was just simply too long of a line to get an iPad. It just, at that point, not everyone in the line got an iPad. And it was insane. The craziest part about the whole situation was that I couldn't get a straight answer from anybody, and the answers that I did get were completely different from every person.
Well, that's not surprising. I mean, it's Apple. They never give out any
questions
information.
Questions regarding what? Availability? Or?
Yeah, yeah. So like, okay, so clearly you don't have any more tonight. Will you get any tomorrow? Some people said no. Some people said we get shipments every day. Some people said we don't know. And so, you know, it was just really, and some of the people were just irritated that I was even asking about reasonable questions like, do you know if you'll get any? And it was just, it just felt really strange. It seemed like an insane situation.
This is a horrible thing to say, and I realize that, but I swear this is just what it felt like. It felt like a major product launch happening while a company's CEO was out on long-term sick leave, and whoever was running the company in his place didn't know what the F he was doing. Up until this point, I thought Tim Cook was doing quite a strong job. I don't know who was in charge of that launch, but it felt like they just didn't have a freaking clue. And it's interesting to say the same thing. They didn't know what they were allowed to say. They didn't. We got inside and the employees were acting like they had no idea there were massive lines outside or they're holding anyone up by doing the cafe disco routine.
Wow.
It was just,
wow.
You guys, it was so disorganized.
You guys had a vastly different experience than I did, or have different impressions on how these launches go. Every device launch that I've gone to for Apple for the past several years has been run exactly like this, where you have people waiting in line. They bring out the coffee and the water, and they try and make people comfortable in line, but the employees will not share any information with you. If they do, they're very vague and elusive about it, especially when you're at the back of the line just wondering, you know, do I need to wait in this line? They will not tell you they don't have iPads, even if they know they do. The one guy that was out in front of ours was like, oh, I just got here and they told me to bring out coffee. I didn't even go in the back and look. Yeah, right. Buying that, but you know, regardless, the employees, that's how it goes.
The employees were coming out and like listing off, because there's 18 different models, and say, okay, we're out of this model. You know, if you want this model, go home. We're low on this one. We're going to run. And then another employee would come out and say something totally different. That's what I'm talking about, where there was no organization. They didn't seem to know what they were supposed to reveal.
Right, yeah. I got a lot of that. That was the most frustrating part about it. The situations where someone would come out and say, okay, we're out of these models and these models, just to let you know, in case you were hoping to get that one, you can go home, because it was cold. And so, you know, I did enjoy that part. But then, as Bill just said, I also got odd, different answers from people, too.
That always happens, though. There's always confusion because they bring in every employee so they've, you know, that they possibly can. So they've got a bunch of guys there, and they're all getting fed different information inside. So none of that stuff was surprising to me. And the slowness, too, is something they've always done as well. I mean, when I got my iPhone 4, it was the same way. What accessories do you want? Can we help you set it up? Do you want us to show you how to use anything? It was always that process. That's part of the Apple buying experience. And they don't, you know, for better or for worse, and Bill, I get you that when you have millions of people waiting, you probably should, it's probably worse. But that's just sort of how Apple rolls and does these things. So
yeah, and I
appreciate
that.
I wasn't shocked by that. I was going in knowing all those things and expecting that to happen, and that's pretty much how it went down, at least at the store I was at. And everybody was really happy and fine. I don't know that anybody was really upset, although I was at the front of the line because I had been there from the morning. About the only time we got upset was when right at 4:30. Our line stretched past another store, and so the security kind of made us leave a gap so that people could get in and out of this other retail estate location that was next to the Apple store. This one guy walked up right at like 4:30 when they were handing out the little cards and got in line in between. Nobody really noticed him. The people behind us were kind of chatting with each other, and we were talking to the people at the front of the line, and I suddenly turn around, and there's this guy who had not been there all day, and he's got his little card. And he's standing behind me, and I'm like, where did you come from? And then he pretended to speak French and not know English.
Oh, nice.
I've used that trick before.
Yeah. So that did not go over well. But beyond that, everybody was pretty cordial and having a good time.
Here in Denver, that guy would have been drug out of line and would have disappeared.
He would have been beaten with icicles.
Well, it was nice weather, so no icicles, but he would have disappeared, and everyone would have just kind of looked the other way. So the Flatiron Crossing store, which is where I went and stood in line, it was pretty well organized. It was like three people whose job it was to be outside, and those were the only people that were providing information outside. So we always got the same message, and it was very, very consistent. And they went down the line with a clipboard and the voucher cards. And and so they were checking off as they went down the line. And when they got to the point where a specific model was out, one of the people would run down the line and say, "We're out of this." And then as they run out of the next thing, they'd go down the line, "We're out of this." And so people that were waiting for that one specific model, they just started peeling out of the line and leaving. But the whole process from when they opened the doors to when they were completely physically sold out was just about an hour long. And that was it. They got everyone in, sold out the entire inventory, and it was over.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I believe
maybe it's just a matter of what store. Because, I mean, like for me, I mean, what I keep thinking back to is the original iPhone launch in 2007, where there must have been 300-400 people in front of me, even though I'd been there all day. And once the doors opened, I had my iPhone in hand 20 minutes later. This was, there were, like I said, maybe 150 people in front of me. And it was after the doors opened, it was 3 or 4 hours. And maybe it was just a bad store, you know, or a bad day they were having or something. But that's what just jumped out at me. It's like, this is comical because... But I think the real exacerbating thing is they just didn't make any. I mean, we were kind of doing a head count and doing the math, and it looked like this Apple store had 3 or maybe 4 of each white iPod model in stock for a launch day. It's like, are you kidding me? I mean, that's almost in white iPhone 4 territory. I think that may have, you know, exacerbated the problem. They just didn't have any of anything.
Yeah, I think part of it is that they have a lot of models now because they have, you know, when the first iPad launched, they didn't even have the 3G models. They just had the Wi-Fi models. And now we have two other subsets of iPad model. And, you know, it was very interesting to see that a lot of people actually went for the 3G model. According to Piper Jaffray, they surveyed a bunch of people. 28% last year got the 3G model and 70% this year got the, it's 47% got the 3G model and 53% got the Wi-Fi only model, which is very interesting. And it kind of, you know, indicates that people are planning to use this thing everywhere. And I believe 70%, according to Piper Jaffray, were new buyers of the iPad 2, as opposed to, you know, someone who's had the iPad already. Which is very cool. It kind of indicates to me that, you know, a lot of people who don't necessarily need to use a computer all day, or someone who does a lot of Facebook and a lot of just simple web browsing and doesn't use their computer for much other than browsing and email and maybe some video. Now that they see that the iPad has done so well, they're going for it. You know, a lot of the time, you know, especially with like my parents and my brother, and they use their computers in front of the TV. You know, they're always it's always on their chest or on their lap, and you know, they're always doing something else. And it seems like the iPad has really solidified itself as being one of those, you know, just casual browsing things, and it's a very obvious fit in people's lives now.
It's a great upgrade. Don't let my negativity about the way the launch was handled cloud the fact that it's, I mean, I'm just, even it didn't look great on paper. I mean, it looks like it's a smidgen lighter, a smidgen thinner, but then you go to pick it up and you're like, this is a whole, it feels like a whole different device.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's just around
yeah.
the corners or something, but it's, the other one feels like a just a giant brick now compared to the new one. So
let's go around you, everybody, but I got an iPad, right? An iPad
oh,
too.
Oh, Michael.
Right?
Did you yes. get a did you get
so
a Zoom?
Sad.
I accidentally got a Zoom. I didn't okay, I went to the wrong store.
At least you didn't get a Zoom.
Right, yeah, that'd be bad. No, I didn't. Wait, yeah, I actually had already sold my iPad before, and unfortunately was not able to get an iPad 2. I'll probably wait like a week or two. But I'm borrowing a friend's iPad in the meantime.
I have a question about that.
Sure.
So did you try, have you tried over the weekend, like just to see?
Oh, yeah.
If Apple's getting shipments and it's just nothing.
Oh, yeah. It's a, I don't want to drop the F-bomb here, but it's a...
ghost town everywhere. Target, Best Buy.
It's, yeah. I mean...
Apple Store,
so,
AT&T Store.
So I mainly stuck with the Apple stores in downtown Chicago, so the Michigan Avenue store and the Lincoln Park Apple store, because it seemed like they would get the most inventory. Best Buy, according to everybody I talked to, seemed like they maybe got 15 models per Best Buy store. Walmart's, if they did get them, they got 3. Every place was sold out, and it only seemed like Apple stores were getting resupplied. So Saturday, I went out to the Lincoln Park store. They got about 80 iPads in on Saturday, and but by the time I got there was a very large line, and nobody was giving me a straight answer there. You know, I just basically wanted to know, should I wait around or not? And finally I went up to the guy who seemed to be in charge of inventory, and he goes, yeah, I wouldn't wait. It does not seem like you're going to get one. So I went over to the North Michigan Avenue Apple store, assuming, hey, you know, if Lincoln Park got some, they probably got at least as many. They hadn't gotten any at that point. And so I decided to go to a restaurant, get something to eat. And while I was there, I actually called Jeff, and he mentioned to me that one of the stores in Colorado got a surprise drop shipment of iPads.
Yeah, so actually two that I know of did.
Okay, yeah. So I went back to the Michigan Avenue Apple store at about 2:00. I was there at around 12:30, and they said that at about 1:30 they got their surprise shipment of iPads, and I totally missed it.
Oh God.
Like they so just
pretty
flew
much,
out of the store.
Pretty much if you want one, it sounds like you just gotta camp out at Apple stores like all day.
Well yeah, I mean, so Sunday,
like just hang out on the loading dock
or
whatever.
Apple could have just manufactured a few and held back the launch till April when they had built up inventory. Am I the only one that thinks that something was strange about, like,
I don't know about that. I on Monday I went to the Michigan Avenue Apple store. I decided I would get there at 8:30. They open at 9. And of course there was already a line there, you know, on Monday. And unfortunately, at about 9:15, someone came out and said, hey, you know, if you're waiting for an iPad, we don't have any. We won't have any today at all today. So, you know, you can just leave. And at the Lincoln Park store, they said that if they did get any in on Monday, they were planning to hold them until the next day. So it seems like from this point on, if you haven't gotten an iPad 2 and you want to get one from a retail store, you'll want to be there a little bit before opening. And if they don't have any at opening, they will not be selling any for the rest of the day. And this isn't, of course, official word, but it seems like that's how the stores are handling it. They're basically just going to keep whatever they get throughout the day until the morning so that customers who line up in the morning can get them. And then it's just the most organized way that they can think of to handle that.
I read that. That's what they did this morning, right? So are they going to do a Tuesday thing, or is it going to be every Tuesday, or is it going to be every day they're going to kind of do that?
I think it's every day. I didn't hear from Lincoln Park or Michigan Avenue that they were opening early. Michigan Avenue actually opens at 9. Lincoln Park opens at 10. They start answering phones at 9, though. So they said, you know, give us a call at 9 to determine, you know, whether we've gotten any in.
You're going to need to be in line at that point.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's what I assumed. Like, especially since I live in Rockford, I need to be on my way out at like 7.
Outside the store.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it does seem like they're getting them in every day, and the morning is when to get them, and if you don't get them in the morning, either they didn't get any or you were too late. So that seems like the best way to go about it. According to some analysts, I think Piper Jaffray went with 500,000 iPads sold. Some analysts even expected 1 million iPad 2s were sold in the first weekend, and most of them were sold on Friday, right?
Yeah, I would assume most were sold on Friday, because what stores were getting, at least around here on Saturday, their official shipments were like 7, and it'd be 5 Verizon iPads that no one wanted to buy,
yeah,
and 2 AT&T iPads that would go right away.
Yeah,
I had the same thing. They couldn't give away the Verizon iPad. Somebody told me it's not been that way at every store, but it's interesting that it was at your store as well. I mean, it's weird.
Yeah,
that was at both of the Apple stores that I asked specifically about inventories, and they couldn't hardly give away the Verizon iPads. I think what happened was the Verizon iPads generally stacked up until people realized, if I don't buy this, I'm not going to have anything for a month. So I'll get a Verizon iPhone.
Yeah, it also seemed like
iPad and just use the service. 3G or not. Yeah,
yeah. It also seemed like that was kind of the same deal for a lot of people looking to get 16 gig iPads. At some point, they sold out of the 16 gigs, and a lot more 32 gigs were sold this year than last year.
Well, I ended up with a 32 gig because that's all I could get. I wanted a 64 gig black Wi-Fi, and that wasn't happening. So on Saturday, since I wasn't able to get one on Friday, when the surprise shipment showed up and I was able to get my hands on a 32 gig, I just went ahead and bought it, and I'm hoping that I have enough space on it.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. So 4 to 5 week wait on the Apple online store, either that or try to wait in line. And
they're not doing the availability thing yet.
No, they haven't done that. I'm wondering if they will.
Where you could check availability the night before.
Yeah, I wish that they had done that. But the online orders of the iPad 2s, some of them have already begun shipping. Some people got them today, right, from Apple. I think some AT&T customers got them yesterday. But what do you guys think?
The people that ordered immediately when it went on sale at like midnight.
Right.
I mean, honestly, I was just 30 minutes later and it was already at 2 to 3 weeks. I mean, it was going to be the 18th before I got it, which is, you know, at the earliest. It wasn't shipping till the 18th, and then it's 3 to 4 days to deliver. So
right, you couldn't possibly have delayed that because you had to have one to talk about on We Have Communicators.
Absolutely.
So
is it what show we're on? I thought this was Jeopardy.
Yeah.
What is iPad 2?
iPad Weekly. So what are your guys' thoughts? Is there anything specific that sticks out to you guys? Is the thinness really just amazingly different from the original one, or you know, have you noticed
Bill,
anything?
Yeah, Bill
interesting
already mentioned that, and I think that's the killer feature.
The thinness
for me. I mean, yeah,
it's a lot more comfortable to hold than the first gen.
Yeah, it's slightly thinner on the sides as well. In addition to thickness terms, in width terms, they've shrunk it down slightly. So it seems like it might be a little bit easier to. Thumb type. I don't know if you guys have noticed that. The big
I don't thumb type on mine.
Okay. Yeah. How do you?
I use my middle finger to type.
Uh-huh.
No, don't.
no, I.
You know what's interesting is I don't know. I think we've talked about this on the show before, debating FaceTime. I mean, that is what it is. But you know, as far as the rear-facing camera, I don't know if you noticed, the rear-facing camera sucks. I mean, the pictures are just massively inferior to the iPhone. So it seems like the rear-facing camera is just kind of there because people would go crazy if it weren't. The front-facing camera, you either like FaceTime or you don't. But it does seem like the sort of sveltness of it is, I don't even know if I pronounce that right because I can't speak, is sort of the only, is sort of the feature. You're buying it for that or you're not buying it, or maybe the speed or something. Because the camera is the only feature, and most people aren't going to care about either of those two cameras in there, I don't think.
Sure, yeah. Well, the rear camera, as we've seen from many of the reviews already, the rear camera sucks at still photos. They haven't initially, we thought it might be a 5-megapixel camera, but it seems like it might be the same camera that we saw on the iPod Touch, the current iPod Touch model.
Right.
So it's only good for doing some high-def video. It's probably scaled up. And the front-facing camera is VGA resolution, and I think that's specified on Apple's website, but it's specifically for FaceTime-type chatting.
I actually get better pictures in the same lighting from the front camera than the rear camera.
Oh, interesting.
Oddly enough, or it seems though, at least less noisy,
you know,
in lower light.
I don't really see a great need to have a camera on my iPad, except for the one, you know, FaceTime seems like a great thing for the iPad. And two, having the camera is not necessarily a device for taking photos or even doing video, but more for augmented reality applications. I feel like that would be very, very useful to developers to take advantage of.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. And I agree with Bill about the rear-facing camera being there just to shut people up.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like for me, as I've said before, the speed of the iPad 2 is really the big killer feature for me. So I've been using my iPad and my buddy's iPad on iOS 4.3, which does not allow me to jailbreak because I wanted to try out some other features such as the rotation lock and the iTunes sharing and that fun stuff. It's just terrible switching between applications. Have you guys noticed a vast improvement in being able to multitask and switch between applications? You know, I think it's been confirmed that the iPad 2 has 512 megs of RAM as opposed to 256 that the original iPad had.
You know, everything feels a little bit smoother to me, but as far as overall massive performance improvements, I'm not seeing a lot of that. Like in Safari, sure, but a lot of that may be because of iOS 4.3 and the new JavaScript engine. Mail, which used to always be really sluggish for me, isn't anymore.
Yeah.
So there's that. But as far as switching between applications, well, before, it still is what it is. And getting the little bar to come up and selecting an app and it jumps over to the other app, that still works the same as it did. I'm not seeing anything there that makes me think, wow, this is way better.
You don't think that the responsiveness in switching between applications, well, I guess
Overall, I think, is better. And so responsiveness in the multitasking part is better as well.
Is it more immediate? Because I've noticed with on my iPad, the original iPad, that the switching between applications, you know, when you jump over to the other application, it takes a second or two to actually come back alive in the ability to do anything.
Yeah, then it's probably a little bit faster.
Okay. What about stuff like page turns in iBooks? It seems to me, you know, now that I have iPad 2 on the mind, I'm thinking, you know, this is slow, that's slow, you know, especially iBook page turning. You know, if you want to flip through several pages very quickly, there's a 1 to 2 second lag in each page turn, it seemed like, on the original iPad. Is that something you guys have given any testing on?
I'm not noticing
any
difference, but I wasn't seeing any lags in page turning like you were.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I saw a lot of videos about people talking about, you know, how, you know, the graphics processor in there must be really helping out as, in terms of page turns. The page turns are very smooth now as opposed to the original iPad, and especially with scrolling through large pages of in Safari, you get a lot less of the checkerboard effect. And there was a video that TipBee posted showing, you know, how if you open up several tabs in Safari on the previous iPad, it would generally dump those pages out of memory, and it would require you to reload them once you jump back to them. And in their testing in that video, it showed that you could open up a tab, or essentially what the limit is in tabs in Safari. You could open every single tab open and not have to reload any of those, as opposed to with the original iPad, which would require you to reload about half. So that's pretty cool. Other things, the iPad 2, of course, was torn down by iFixit. I found that there was a lot less room, just free space hanging out in the iPad 2 as opposed to the original iPad. There was a significant amount of space in the original iPad. This one is just completely packed, and in a lot of cases, they chose to use glue instead of screws. In fact, to get the front off, they had to use a heat gun.
And they cracked the glass.
Oh, they did? I didn't notice that.
Yeah, when they lifted the glass up, it must have torqued just enough, and it put cracks all through it.
Oh, boy. I'm sure they're used to that kind of stuff, though.
Yeah, so the moral of that story is, if you think it'd be fun to heat up your iPad, no. Take the glass off and look inside, don't.
Yeah, yeah. So the battery is significantly bigger. In terms of size, anyway, it's much thinner. It takes up the about the entire size of the iPad. They say that it's a 25 watt hour battery as opposed to the 24.8 watt hour battery. So it's a little bit bigger in terms of actual capacity. And the smart cover was even torn down, and it revealed that there are 21 magnets in the smart cover.
And then another 10 in the iPad.
Yeah. So there are, there's a long strip of magnet in the on the side of the iPad for the smart cover to connect to. There's also the magnetic sensor and several other magnets that help keep the smart cover from accidentally opening. And several other magnets to also keep the smart cover stable when you put it in one of those prop-up modes, which is very cool. And, you know, that's definitely one of the selling points to me for the smart cover is the prop-up ability of it.
You know, but the prop-up thing, so you can use the iPad almost like it's a keyboard?
Yeah.
Holy crap. That, for me, is worth the price of the whole package right there.
For the smart cover?
Yes, because typing on my original iPad in the Apple case, and I use the on-screen keyboard a lot, well, actually exclusively, when I'm typing on that, the iPad would bounce a little bit. And so my fingers weren't always sitting in the exact same spot, which meant that I had more typing errors than I would like. The iPad 2 with the fold-up cover thing, holy crap, that thing is rock solid.
Nice.
It does not bounce at all. My typing accuracy improved instantly.
That's cool.
Are you now able to type on the iPad without wearing pants?
I've always been able to type on the iPad without wearing pants.
Yeah, he's a master at that.
I am.
master of something.
Adam, did you get a smart cover?
I did get a smart cover, and I really like it. I just got the blue polyurethane.
Yeah.
Or, no, not blue, green. I'm looking at something blue. The green polyurethane. And I really like it. It is much more solid, and about the only complaint I have about it is I was using it. I watched Netflix sometimes in bed laying down or whatever, and a couple times I was actually able, with it sort of rolled around, as I was moving around, I knocked it off a couple times. The magnets just, you know, by pushing in certain areas, I guess, it fell off twice on me last night, which was a little annoying. But you can always just take it off, which is what I ended up just doing, is just getting rid of it because I was laying down and didn't really need it. But The other thing is when it's rolled around the back, I wish Apple had put some little magnets to kind of hold it to the back.
Yeah, I wondered if they were going to do that.
It flops around.
That would have been a nice touch.
Yeah. So, but beyond that, it's pretty nice. I do want to comment on a couple things on the speed. You know, for mine, I'm not noticing a huge speed increase. And Michael, as you were talking, because I hadn't really tested switching between applications, I have my original iPad, which is in exactly the same state with the same apps and same everything as my new one, because I just did the sync from backup. So I've been doing things where I have them side by side and I do the exact same actions at the exact same time on both devices. And almost 90% of the time, the two, they could be mirror images of each other.
Wow.
There's very few exceptions where I'm noticing things going a little bit faster. Occasionally, depending on the app, launching an application from a cold launch where I hadn't launched the app before will be a little bit quicker on the iPad 2, but we're talking seconds here. You're taking 1 second, 2 second, 5 seconds on the extreme. Spotlight searching is a lot quicker on the iPad 2, which is a big deal for me because I use that as my application launcher. So that is I am noticing a significant boost there.
Nice.
I think a lot of that is part of apps needing to be optimized for dual core. And it makes sense when you think about it, because if it's only running a single core, it's a 1 gigahertz, you know, single core or 1 gigahertz dual core. Well, if it's only running one core, it's the same processor speed as the original one. So yeah. It makes sense that a lot of things are acting the same.
And
same thing on the graphics side. You know, they're going to have to optimize apps to take advantage of that. So I think long term, we're going to see huge speed gains in performance with apps and things like that. But I think it's going to take some time for the software to catch up with the hardware.
Yeah, I saw. I tried in the store with my iPad. I played around with one, and so I rebooted mine, and I rebooted the one in the store, and actually did some app launching and switching between tabs and Safari and scrolling and that kind of stuff. And I did notice significant improvements in those.
But
areas.
What's significant in terms of real world? And this is what I keep coming back to, and I want to let people know, because so many people are reporting that it's such a huge speed increase, but I think you have to put it in perspective. So if apps are launching 1 second, 2 seconds, 5 seconds faster, I think that's a significant stat to say to someone who is thinking about upgrading or not sure if they should upgrade and spend the money, you know, is it worthwhile or can I wait? You know, can I skip this generation and wait, or do I have to have this one because my apps launch 2 seconds faster?
You know, I feel like they're
going to have to make that call.
You do have to make that call. And I would encourage anybody who is not sure about that to go into the Apple store and do a side-by-side comparison to decide if they think that it is significant enough for them. You know, it's kind of the same deal as we saw with the iPhone 3G and the 3GS. For me, it was significant enough. It was definitely important to me to have the 3GS as opposed to the 3G, especially now, of course. But you know, back then it wasn't as fast as I wanted it to be as, you know, as my iPhone 4 is, and that has the ability to multitask. Multitasking does not work well on a 3GS, in my opinion. But on the iPhone 4, doesn't matter. I can leave applications open, and I feel like the same thing will probably hold true with the iPad 2 for me, at least, in that it will be a lot easier to keep applications open at the same time, be able to switch through them much more quickly. And although I haven't been able to try that firsthand, so I'm still going from the standpoint of it's friggin' slow to switch between applications on the first generation iPad, and I'm guessing that it's going to be much nicer.
Yeah, so it's like everything. You have to look at what your usage is and how you're going to be using it, and if you're frustrated with the speed now, if you are doing those things where you're going to want to be doing a lot of multitasking, if you're a light to medium iPad user and you're happy with the iPad 1, you know, you may not need to spend the extra money now, and you might want to wait. But the other thing I want to talk about, though, that is a significant difference to me, or at least something I've noticed. I don't know if I can call it significant, and I'm curious if anybody else on the show has noticed this. The screen. So the screen specs are the same, reportedly. Nothing's changed. Pixel density is the same, 132 ppi. But I immediately noticed when I turned it on that it looked brighter to me. And I did confirm that doing side by side, that the same brightness level, if I had them both right in the middle, the iPad 2 is about 25% brighter. Now, I did some more testing, and I did put them both on full brightness. It's not as noticeable of a difference when they're both at full brightness. It's maybe 5, 10% brighter on the iPad 2. Same thing on the other end of the scale, though. When I turned them both all the way down to their lowest brightness setting, the original iPad was slightly dimmer. So it seems like it might have a broader range in that respect. The other thing is text does appear on the iPad 2 to me to be just slightly sharper, has a little bit more crispness to it.
Yeah, I think
that I'm not sure why that is.
I think the color profile on the iPad 2 is definitely different. I think it's
warmer. Yeah, and I don't like it. Mine has a slight yellower, warmer tone to it, less blue. And I'm hoping that's something that Apple tweaks or fixes with some video updates, because I think it looks kind of yellowish.
I like the current color temperature on the iPad too. Jeff, what do you think?
Like the warmer, more toward the yellow tones than the
It's interesting because I tend toward the cooler temperature on my desktop, on my laptop, mm-hmm. But side by side with my iPad and the iPad 2, I definitely preferred the iPad 2 color profile. Jeff, what do you think?
You know, definitely brighter, and text does look sharper on the iPad 2. As far as variation in color temperature, the variation that I'm seeing isn't as dramatic as what it sounds like Adam is seeing.
Yeah.
They're definitely different. Yeah, the iPad 2 does have a little bit warmer cast, but it's not that much. And if I were to put my iPad 1 and iPad 2 side by side and let someone that doesn't really understand color and color temperature and all that, if let them look at it, and they probably wouldn't be able to tell the difference. I can definitely see it, though.
Yeah. Well, some users are actually reporting that they are having a yellow blotchy screen. You know, they get the, last year.
Yeah, that's that same adhesive thing.
Right.
The glue they complained about with iPhone 4.
Yeah, it does appear to be the same thing as what we saw with the iPhone 4, in that, you know, there were some little yellow blotches that actually went away after a couple days. It wasn't from Apple, but it was found that the adhesive that they used to adhere the touch sensor and the LCD together was just simply not, it didn't have enough time to dry from the time that it left the factory. They just didn't let it dry and shipped it out immediately. And after 2 days, that went away. However, some users are also seeing that their backlight is doing some odd bleeding, in that they get some strange blotchiness toward the sides, toward the edges of their screen. Have you guys noticed anything like that?
Try giving it the death yet? I mean,
that blotchiness and
blanket.
The blotchiness and on the edge thing I thought was related to the yellowing glue stuff.
No, it appears to be independent of that.
Interesting. No, I'm not having any issues with the blotchiness or backlight bleeding.
Yeah, so...
So in other words, there's something wrong with yours that it doesn't have the same defects as some other people claim.
Yeah, I would return
it. I feel ripped off. I didn't get the capacity I wanted, and now I don't have the same problems as everyone else. What the hell?
Take it back and demand a defective one. Get it right.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep. The GPU was benchmarked on the iPad 2, and they found that it has about 3 to 5 times increase in speed as opposed to the original iPad, and it's actually... let's see. Faster than the Motorola Zoom. I'm looking for the actual stat. Yeah. 3.7 times faster than the Zoom. So it's got, I mean, I think the graphics chip in the iPad 2 is the most significant increase that they put is in terms of performance in the iPad, which was kind of surprising to me. But it seems like Apple might be going toward the toward the games, right?
Well, games and video. And if you're expecting people to use this as a video viewing device, having that extra horsepower for graphics is nice. And I'm wondering how much of that gets used for AirPlay.
Graphics?
Well, I mean the graphics processor itself.
I doubt that anything of the graphics processor is used for AirPlay, and I don't think that a lot of the graphics processor is even used for video playback. I feel like some of it is, but I don't think that it was really necessary to increase the graphics performance that significantly with the iPad 2 if it was mostly for video playback.
You know, well, maybe Apple has something else in store.
Sorry, go ahead, Bill.
I was just going to say, you know, Apple has to get past that. Even someone like me, you know, I don't reach for my iPad as much as maybe I will in the future, in a few generations, because in a lot of ways it still feels just like a giant 10-inch iPhone. What can I really do on it? You know what I mean? Yeah, I could type better on it. I could do certain things better on it because it's bigger, but really, what can I do on it that I cannot do on my iPhone? When I hear graphics, I start thinking about things like, yeah, I mean, it's much easier to watch a movie on it. And the game development, you know, there's things you just can't do on a 3-inch screen, no matter how genius of a game developer you are when you're talking about yeah, you know, complex stuff. And then so if they do that, it just kind of gives the third-party developers motivation to kind of like what Twitter did, where the Twitter app on the iPad is amazing. They actually take, you know, advantage of the space, as opposed to Words with Friends, which is almost literally just a larger version of the iPhone version. So if they do that and they give the developers room to run and let the developers turn the iPad into something more than a 10-inch iPhone. And, I mean, that may be what they're after, or I may be full of crap as usual.
No, I definitely think that's the key for the iPad. When the iPad first came out, I had no idea why I would want it. And then I got attached to a few apps, and then it just blew wide open for me. You know, using the iPad is part of my, you know, daily content consumption, you know, with having Air Video and Netflix and iBooks and you know, Twitter and stuff like that. It's you know, that's the big key here, and I definitely feel like you know, I would say there are more games than anything else in the App Store, and that is one of the most attractive demos to provide to somebody, is a game on the iPad. And I feel like, you know, like you said, but Bill, the iPad's much better than the iPhone or the iPod Touch at doing games, because you do have so much more real estate in order to, you know, to play your games in. And so I definitely feel like that, you know, that's probably the primary reason. And of course, you know, Apple likes to do the eye candy as well in their operating systems. And so with the fun transitions that they have, putting in more graphics horsepower is definitely going to help out. In addition to the fact that you have the Grand Central, is Grand Central the thing that enables applications to use up some graphics horsepower and enable to do CPU stuff?
Right.
Yeah. So you have that benefit as well, or is it OpenCL?
It's OpenCL.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I thought the PR name Apple was using was Grand Central.
No, those are two different technologies.
Oh, see, there's so much
gonna,
crap.
Next year, they're
going to
rename it Google Voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Grand Central, I think, is the thing that that is more related to the controller chip and how data is moved and passed between those processors.
Oh, the Grand
so
Central,
it's probably related. Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was thinking of right there. Okay.
Yeah.
So we were kind of on the same page, just talking about different parts of the system.
Yeah,
yeah. I think those two things together are kind of what makes it possible. OpenCL is the technology that's in the graphics chip itself. This is my understanding of it, and I'm no expert at it. But it's my understanding that's the thing in the graphics chips itself that it allows it to receive instructions, you know, from and take on instructions from the off of the CPU, I guess is what I want to say. And then Grand Central is the thing that sort of coordinates everything going back and forth between the different processors, the CPU and the GPU, and things like that.
Sure. That sounds right. So did you guys try installing iMovie on your previous generation iPads? Because you can. With the did you use the iPhone configuration utility?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, so I guess the and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the steps are: one, buy iMovie in the App Store on your computer in iTunes. Two, get the iPhone configuration utility, and then you want to add iMovie to the configuration utility. And through the iPhone configuration utility, you select your iPad, and under the Applications tab, there will be an option to install iMovie. And I guess the configuration utility just ignores the fact that it's an iPad, an original iPad, and allows you to install it.
Yeah, it sort of bypasses the check, and that tool is, you know, a tool for like IT professionals to deploy and install, you know, iPhones in their businesses or what have you. There's a couple caveats. That one thing is you may have to tell it where iMovie is, so you sort of have to go out and find iMovie, which is in your iTunes Music mobile applications directory, and then it will kind of show up, and then you'll be able to use the configuration tool to put it onto the iPad. But the other thing to know about it is once you have done that, you have totally just kind of tweaked iTunes' ability to like sync stuff. So what'll happen is, even though you'll have iMovie on your iPad now and you can launch it and use it, the next time you go to dock or sync with iTunes, it will pop up and it will say, oh, this copy of iMovie isn't authorized to be installed on this iPad. Do you want to authorize it, or do you want to not authorize it and we'll remove it, or your third option is cancel? If you click authorize, you get stuck in a loop. So it'll let you put in your iTunes username and password. It won't authorize iMovie, and then it will pop back up and ask you to authorize again. So it never authorizes. It doesn't burn an authorization, but you kind of can't get any further in iTunes. If you hit don't authorize, it will remove iMovie from the iPad and then go about its business of syncing.
Yeah,
and what have you. The last option is cancel, which is fine. You can cancel, but then you can never do a sync or do an app update or anything like that, because that kills the whole syncing process at that point. So I think what happens is you dock it in, it runs the backup, so at least you get the backup done, but none of your syncing is going to work until you take iMovie off of there. So,
yeah, that makes sense. So is it worth putting iMovie on your original iPad? Is it fast enough to handle that?
Yeah, it seems perfectly fine. I didn't notice any performance problems, so I'm not really sure why Apple's not allowing it.
I think it's, you know, because so for playing around with iMovie on camera devices only.
Yeah,
that does make sense.
For playing around with it, it's perfectly fine. So if you just want to mess with it, you want to see what it's like, and especially if you already have it for like your iPhone 4, you know, it's universal, so you can just do it. That's how I got it. I didn't pay extra for iMovie. It's not going to be really convenient for keeping it on there. I mean, if you really wanted to mess with it, you can hit cancel when that message comes up, and it will show up in the iTunes app area, and you can, you know, pull all of your iMovie projects off of it, let it erase iMovie, and then if you ever want to put it back on, you can reverse that process and, you know, put all your iMovie projects back on it. But really a pain in the butt to manage.
Yeah, that is good. I didn't think about actually, you know, if it does uninstall, it'll also remove all of your data.
Yeah, it takes the data with it too. Yeah, so you're going to want to make sure you hit cancel the first time, back up your iMovie projects, which means you also have to, before you even dock it, you got to remember in iMovie to send those projects to iTunes before they'll show up. You know, it's that whole broken file transfer process that the iPad has.
Yeah, yeah. So was anybody affected by more time glitches on your iPhone because of daylight savings?
Nope.
No.
I thought that was only the Verizon kiddies who had that.
Well, initially it was reported that it was only Verizon, right? And then it seemed like also AT&T users were being affected by that. But what was the issue? That it was falling behind an hour instead of springing forward an hour?
Some cases 2 hours, right? I think heard.
That sounds like your iPhone's giving you a vacation.
You know what's weird about these things? It's hard to job pin down who has it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, you know, supposedly I've been told, I don't know, told me that every single iPhone user had the New Year's Day alarm clock bug. Well, I didn't, so I guess I had a broken iPhone, you know?
Yeah.
So sometimes you hear such nonsense and people's repeating stuff and they get into that pattern of, you know, it's a very, it's just a natural human thing to say, oh my God, I didn't have that defect. There's something wrong with mine or me. And so who knows? You know, half the stuff you hear, people are like, oh, well, I know that bug is real, even though I didn't have it and I don't know anyone else who had it. So
yeah. Well, a lot of that stuff is
National Enquirer.
A lot of that stuff is simply based on, you know, a series of events occurring on your phone that the programmer just simply didn't anticipate. And so it caused an error. And in that case, the error was an incorrect change in time. So, you know, you might have done something at some point that made it so it didn't. And those people who did have the issue, at least with, you know, concerning daylight savings this time around, you know, those people might have done something really strange that just doesn't usually happen, and it produced that result.
This is sounding like this time around, it sounded almost to me, because it seemed to be only affecting AT&T and Verizon people in certain areas. I had to wonder if it wasn't something wrong with a cell tower, because your phone goes out when you're on the 3G networks, right, and gets the time from the cell tower network, right?
Yeah.
Just correct me if I'm wrong. So it seems like maybe those cell towers had maybe an older software or didn't get an update, or maybe were sending out an incorrect time and the iPhone just picked it up.
And I feel like that makes more sense, because it didn't seem like it was nearly as widespread as the New Year's bug was.
Yeah.
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 So, but the iPhone 5 is rumored to be to use an A5, a dual core A5 chip, of course, as we've anticipated, because the iPad 2 has it. But it's been essentially confirmed based on some information in the kernel files identified by the Chronic dev team. So they found that in addition to the iPad 2 being listed as the kernel supporting a dual core A5 chip, the iPad, or there's a, I guess they call it the N94, right? They don't have iPhone 5 in there. It's just a code name. But so that does seem to indicate that we will definitely see a dual core A5 chip, as if we didn't think we would already. And lastly on our list of things to talk about, Phil Schiller tweeted to somebody that we will see the white iPhone 4 available in the spring, and it's a beauty, in parentheses.
Now, did you actually say iPhone 4 or white iPhone? I don't remember.
He said the white iPhone.
Okay, so maybe the iPhone 4, but more likely the iPhone 5.
Oh, I hope so.
Keep in mind that WWDC is technically in the spring. Summer doesn't start till late June. So that's what I wondered, if he was just kind of being coy. Didn't want to say, oh, don't worry, the white iPhone 5, you know, the iPhone 5 will come in white. But he didn't want to mention iPhone 5, so he just kind of did it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
What the hell is Phil Schiller doing on Twitter anyway? How un-Apple-like is that anyway?
Well, I think Scott Forstall also has a Twitter account, right, but hasn't used it. But yeah, Phil Schiller's been on Twitter for a couple months now, and as far as I can tell, he's pretty annoying.
He says very little about Apple. It's about his personal hobbies, like the cult of Phil, which is fine. I mean, that's kind of what we all do, but it's interesting that, you know, one of Apple's execs finally jumps on Twitter and, you know, kind of predictably talks about anything but Apple. And then all of a sudden, how many times a day do you think that Phil Schiller account gets asked when the white iPhone is coming? 100,000 times a day or something? All of a sudden he answers one. And I'm thinking, of course, was that planned? Was, you know, is this what Apple's new way of leaking something? You know,
I hope not.
You're just jealous he didn't respond to you, right? I mean, I'm jealous he didn't respond to me. So.
Yeah, I mean, because, yeah, we definitely all asked him a lot of questions on Twitter. I like his icon. What is that? Is that a... I don't get it. What's the reference there?
That's the iPhone 5.
it's going to look like a dolphin with glasses? Is that what that is? Do you guys know what that is?
It's from some cartoon.
Okay.
I can't remember which one.
Marine Boy? I don't know. Whatever. So are there anything Any other items we should talk about with regard to the iPad 2 or upcoming iPhone 5 rumors, or are we ready to get down to our iDevice picks? Anybody going once?
Can we just keep stalling it out since I don't have a pick? And we talk about iPhone 6, iPad 7.
Well, we already know that your pick is going to be a smart cover.
You know, unlike... Well, we'll get there.
Okay. All right. So, Adam, do you want to go first?
Sure.
All right.
I think. I'll try. I'm kind of playing with mine because it just came out. So, I am going to pick something that I actually saw at Macworld because I was kind of excited about the software, and I haven't had a chance to play around with it because it was literally just came out today. But I know that it works pretty well because I saw it working at Macworld, and it's a hardware software pick. The software is from a company called Ubic, and the product is something called the Gimbal. And it's for taking panorama shots on the iPhone. And they had some beautiful panoramas that they had blown up pretty large. I don't know how big they were, you know, 19 by 25 or 16 by 25. I don't know if the rest of you saw this. But it's a panorama app. And what's neat about it is you can set up a project, and I think it uses the gyroscope and things like that to help you line up all of your shots. It gives you kind of this little grid, and it takes care of managing the overlap for you in your images, so it makes sure that it gets a really good stitched together image. And then to further help you along, they sell an iPhone 4 case and a little device called the Gimbal that makes sure that your iPhone camera lines up perfectly over the pivot point for taking panoramas, so that can help you get even better shots.
Cool.
With it. So I'm going to play around with it a little bit, but I know it works. And the grid thing's kind of cool because you can start a project and you can snap pictures. And if you miss one, it'll help you line back up the missing shot. You just kind of fill in the little holes and end up getting your picture.
Nice. How do you spell that, by the way?
Y-O-U-B-I-Q.
Okay. All right, good. I'll be able to put that in the show notes then. So is the application free or?
It's $2.99, I believe.
Okay, $2.99.
And I think the Ubic device, the case, and the little hardware device, which also works as a tripod mount, sort of a pistol grip, and I think also they have a tripod mount version of it. And did I say tripod mount? I meant as a little tripod stand. I want to say that was $79, and that's the case and the little handle thing, the gimbal.
Yeah,
and that's GYMBIL, I believe, is, you know, creative way of spelling gimbal as well.
GYMBL.
There you go.
Yep, that'll be in the show notes. You said it was $79.
I think it's $79 for that. Yeah.
Okay, I can't bring up the store right now. Their store is currently closed, but there will definitely be a link to the product page on ubic.com for that in the show notes. And Jeff, what is your pick this week?
My pick is an iPhone app called Cooks Illustrated. It's a cookbook app for your iPhone, and it's really nice. It's done by the people that do a lot of the America's Test Kitchen stuff, which is it's a program where they take recipes that everyone makes that are just kind of meh, and they figure out the chemistry behind why the recipes aren't that good, and then make them a lot better. So really good recipes, and so there's this Cooks Illustrated app that has a lot of really nice recipes, gives you very detailed instructions on how to prepare the food, includes built-in timers for while you're preparing the food, and it's a nice little app and it's free.
Cool. iPhone only, right?
My iPhone only. Yeah, that's my complaint. I wish that it hasn't been updated in a long time, like months. So it'd be nice if they released an update that added in iPad support, because it would be a lot easier to have your iPad up on the counter reading a recipe than trying to do it on the smaller iPhone screen.
Right. Cool. Bill, have you decided on a pick? It can be hardware, it can be software.
Yeah, I was going to pick the smart cover just to be a smart ass because I had the decency not to buy one, you know, whereas everyone else, I probably will pick one up. I was just, it was dragging out long enough in the store. I didn't want to deal with that as well. It might have taken 3 extra seconds. I'm not sure. But, you know, I mean, the running joke about it is, oh, it looks like a Japanese bath cover. And I kind of thought about that. Maybe that's not funny this week since a lot of Japan is lying under rubble right now. So I guess maybe my pick is the Red Cross link in iTunes. You know, if you can afford an iPad too, you can probably afford to send a couple bucks that way. So
yeah,
rather than making a joke, I guess I'll be serious for once.
That's good. I like that pick.
Very good pick, yeah.
That's a first.
What was that?
So that's a, you actually like my pick. That's a first.
All right. So my pick, it's interesting, Jeff, that you mentioned a cooking application, because my pick is Paprika. I don't recall the developer's name, but it's a cookbook application. And instead of providing you with recipes, it provides you with a space to list all of the recipes that you want to save in a cookbook, and allows you to go out to the internet and find them. So the way it works is it's a blank slate when you first get it. So the best way to grab some recipes is to hit the browser button down at the bottom, and it gives you several bookmarks preloaded, so you can search for whatever you want. So, you know, it has All Recipes, Big Oven, Epicurious, Food Network, Food.com, My Recipes, and Simply Recipes. And I believe all of these sites have been considered in the development of the application. And by that, I mean, when you go to epicurious.com, let's say, and you find a recipe that you want to save, all you have to do is just hit save recipe, and it understands the entire layout of the site, and you can pull in all that stuff with one button click, and that's awesome. So then you can go back to your recipes tab. You have all the recipes you want. You can have most recent. You can list your favorite recipes, and you can actually have a bunch of different folders and, you know, categorize them and add tags, prep time, ingredients, preparation instructions, how many people it serves, where the actual source of it is from, and you can actually email it off and do all these really great things. But my favorite part about this application is the way that you add other recipes into it. So, for example, because I'm vegan, I go to a recipe called vegweb.com. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly, but there's a really good recipe that I like called Happy Vegan Chocolate Chip Cookies. And
are those the ones that you made and brought to Macworld?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh. Sorry, I'm just reliving the moment. Those were really good cookies.
Yeah, those are those have gone down in the history of I think what was it, Blog World and Mac World, where I brought them, and lots of people were talking about them. So I got this from VegWeb, and in order to import that recipe, if it doesn't understand the structure of the site, it allows you at the bottom. It says, photo, name, ingredients, directions. And so what you do is you highlight each item. So let's say, you want to use the image, one of the images on the page you found is the image that you want to use for the recipe. So you tap and hold like you would to copy the image, and it gives you two options. It gives you copy image and save to photo library. And the third option is, use for, your recipe. And the same thing goes for the name, ingredients, etc. All you do is just select which piece is which and say, where it belongs in the recipe. And so in a minute, you can save an entire recipe. I would say less time than that even. So you find your recipe, select all the different parts. Ta-da, you have a very nicely laid out recipe in your cookbook. It's very cool. And what did I say? Paprika. It's $5. It can actually, it has a bunch of other features and grocery list stuff kind of things too. But I really like it. It's one of those I've been looking for a recipe management application for a while since I got the iPad, because that just seemed like such a natural thing to be able to do with the iPad. And I would say that Paprika is it's very attractive. It's very easy to use. You can get the recipes in there very easily from websites, which is where I generally get my recipes. Otherwise, you know, there's manual entry if you want to manually enter a recipe. And there's even a cloud sync option. So it's $10 per year. They allow you to back up all of your recipes in case you don't want them to suddenly disappear if you don't have a good backup or something like that. But of course, all the information backs up with iTunes, and so I haven't actually felt a need to do that. So I'm on my buddy's iPad right now, and I believe I created this particular recipe on my first iPad. So and it's still here, and it works great. So my pick is Paprika. It's $5. With that, you can find all of the iPhone picks as well as the show notes for this episode and every episode at wehavecommunicators.com. Just click on the episode title. You'll be able to check all that stuff out and leave comments. I definitely encourage everyone to leave a comment. If you have a question, comment, anything else you want to mention for us, I generally check that out. I'm not sure if anybody else does, but I check it out. I can answer some questions, participate. I've seen other people respond to questions that people have had, so it's a very cool place to discuss the topic at hand. And it's just Discus, so you can use your Twitter to log in. You can use, I don't know, any myriad of things, Facebook, Discus, all that stuff. It's really easy. So check that out. Of course, you can email us using the feedback@wehavecommunicators.com email address. You can find Bill Palmer at BeatWeek Magazine, which is beatweek.com, and twitter.com/Bill Palmer.
Have I blatantly plugged the fact that Kesha's on the cover of our new issue enough times, or should I do that again?
I think you should do that again.
Wait, who's on the cover of what?
Yeah, tell us more.
Well, I don't know. Kesha, global superstar, right? The party don't start till Kesha walks in, and so she's on our cover. So that's that. And before the episode's over, I'm going to find a way.
Which magazine is that?
Brat Wank Magazine.
Oh, right.
No, we changed your name again. No, Beatweek Magazine. I don't know. We're having a party over here, so, and I got to go put on a tux and run down to the boulevard. Believe it or not, don't even ask why. I'm not even sure myself. But
you have a date with Keisha. Or
no,
Kesha? Did she say that it was Kesha or Keisha, or did she say?
It's Kesha. It's a southern name. She's from Nashville. It's
Yeah, I can tell by the cover.
And she talks about the whole American flag thing in the cover story, so it's actually worth reading.
Cool. Yeah. Yep, beatweek.com, and let's see, who else is here? Who am I talking to? Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, twitter.com/jgamet, and of course, zazzle.com/jgamet is where you can find his wonderful drawings on shirts, hats, mugs. Of course, you can find the wonderful We Have Communicators mug as illustrated by Jeff Gamet at the zazzle.com/jgamet store.
And anything you drink out of it tastes better.
True story.
You know, if you say the Zazzle fast enough, it sounds like this asshole.
It sounds like bedazzled. Like do you sell anything that's been bedazzled on the Zazzle store? You have anything with fake jewels and stuff?
I don't have anything bedazzled, but I bet there's a way to bedazzle stuff.
There's probably just a checkbox.
Yeah.
When you're buying the item, just check the bedazzle button.
That would be awesome, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Adam Christensen is at the MacCast, MacCast.com. And, of course, Twitter.com/MacCast is where you can find him on Twitter. And the member.maccast.com URL is where you can find the premium episode, premium version of the MacCast.
That's right. That's right. Hey, you know what? I'm going to – I've never had to do this before, but this is what I get doing. I have to renege my pick.
Uh-oh.
Because it's not ready.
Oh, it's not out yet. Well, I put down. How about
Okay, so the hardware is good. The hardware is still good. The gimbal thing, we talked about that. The software, it doesn't do the pano part, which is the cool part. So
all right,
it does have a cloud service. So with your $2, you get 2 gigs of photo storage, and it will take your photos. It will upload them, and I guess eventually stitch them together. But it's not stitching them together right now. So, two alternative Pano picks real quick. Pano 360. You guys ever use that? That does work, and it's great, and you can share your panos
on
Twitter.
That's a fun app.
Yeah, that is a really cool app, really easy to use. You just sort of drag your camera around. Try that one, or try You Gotta See This from the Boinks people. That does a more stylized kind of, I forget the artist, but it's the artist where you just lay individual images sort of over top of each other, and they match up to kind of make a pano, and it has cool effects and things like that. It's more artsy in terms of the panos, but both of those are really good pano apps that work well to do panos. And yeah, hold off on Epic for this version.
That's the app. You got to see this. That's the app that I use to do the pano of the line outside Flatiron Crossing Mall for the iPad 2 launch. So there's an article that Brent Chaffin wrote at Mac Observer that includes that and several other photos that I took, and actually some photos you took, Adam.
Yeah. There's some photos from my Apple Store opening. So okay, so. Not quite yet on the UBEC. The gimbal is still a really cool piece of hardware, though, if you need something for mounting to a tripod or something like that.
Cool. And You Got to See This. Is that what we're going to go with for the Pano?
You Got to See This or Pano 360.
Okay.
Either one of those two.
Cool. One thing that I want to mention real quick is the ability to, in iOS 4.3, if you have Xcode, you can enable the multitasking gestures, which are very cool. So it allows you to, with a 4 or 5 finger pinch, jump to the springboard, 4 or 5 finger slide up, gets you the multitasking tray, and again, 4 or 5 finger swipe left or right lets you switch between the applications that are open. Have you guys tried that iPad 2?
I'd be more impressed when there's a multi-flasking gesture.
Do you have to? Does it? The question I had, and I hadn't tried this yet because I'm in the developer program. I just hadn't activated it. So is it literally just if I tell it this is my development iPad, it'll do the thing, or do I have to totally restore the software again?
It's very, very simple. All you do, and Adam, you've probably already seen this, but for those who haven't done it, open up Xcode with your iPad plugged in, and it will say, you know, we've detected an iPad. Would you like to use this for development? And there's a big button that says use for development. You press that. It will ask you if you, it'll ask you to sign into your developer account. You don't have to do that. Just hit cancel. After you've done that, go to the settings application. And in under general, there's multitasking gestures. And I believe it actually turns it on as soon as you press that button on your computer. But if it doesn't.
Cool.
And it actually enables a developer pref pane as well for to enable some extra logging, but probably don't want to do that. The fun is the multitasking gesture, so check that out. And I think that's
you,
it.
You got to tell everybody where they can find you, right?
Yeah. Twitter.com/MichaelJohnston, of course, is my personal Twitter. I Twitter about nonsense, so that's fun. Or you can follow Twitter.com/LilReviews, which is where I review various things. I have not gotten my iPad 2 yet, so I have not posted a review where I say, pretty cool, iPad 2. But you can find a lot of other things at Twitter.com/LILReviews. So LilReviews, I review other things besides technology, food, drink, restaurants, other venues, all that fun stuff. Anything that I feel I want to share my opinion on, it's all there at Lil Reviews. And I guess with that, we will see you next time on We Have Communicators.
Hey.
Yay.
You know, one thing we didn't talk about that I wanted to ask you guys about, what was it? It was just on the tip of my tongue and now I forgot it because I was thinking about trying to figure out how to dock this thing.
It'll come to you later.
It was something stupid. It was something inconsequential. But
something about Rebecca Black. So what are
we gonna do? Who is Rebecca Black?
Okay.
So what are we gonna do? Here we go.
Yeah, so she made a really terrible music video. Like, it's so terrible that it's become viral. Like, it's the opposite of something good going viral. It's so bad that everybody's talking about how terrible it is, because at some point she lists off the days of the week. It's a music video, and she's like 14, and they're all driving around in a car, and she's like, today's Friday, tomorrow's Saturday, and the day after that is Sunday. And you know, it's just as it's that inane throughout, and it's just so wonderfully bad, I guess. Is
well, it's like a Black Eyed Peas song.
No. Yuck. No. Yuck. Yuck. No. 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 You have to get them and put them away, and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus, so let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus, so let's not use a stylus. We're gonna use the best pointing.
Made on a Mac, motherfucker.